Are you having a good day so far?
Yeah.
This has been so good.
Yeah.
This has been so good, and we've got one more now, and then we have dinner, and make sure you come back. Remember, write your questions on these index cards, and turn them in before the Q&A tonight, because we usually have a very good Q&A session. We never have enough time to cover all the questions, but we want to do the best we can. So write them short, concise, to the point, and in French. So, okay. This message is, I'm going to try to bring you up to speed to where we are right now with the state of anti-Semitism, which is my topic of specialty for the last 22 years. This is actually also part of a book, and I got a few left that just came out 2 weeks ago, The Normalization of Antisemitism, When the Oldest Hatred Becomes the New Normal. I believe that's where we are. And I also did something in this book. It's not a big book. I don't want to write big books anymore because people's attention span with the internet is... So, including mine. But I want you to know that I include in this book a symposium on the relationship between Israel and the church with contributors like, ready? Some of those names you might have heard. David Reagan? Are you in the room? Are you? Yeah, there he is. Dr. David Reagan. Mike Spaulding, Mondo Gonzalez, Mark Hitchcock, Todd Hampson, Tommy Ice, Brandon House, Brandon Holthouse, Andy Woods, Don Perkins, Tom Hughes, you got to have Tom Hughes, Bill Koenig, and Billy Crone. So they all contributed to the book on their position on Israel and the importance of Israel in the Bible. So just for that, not for what I put in, but just for that, you should get the book. So, all right? So I want to talk about this normalization of anti-Semitism. And let me have a word of prayer and then we'll start. Lord, thank you for this incredible conference. Lord, it is so good to be in the midst of like-minded people who take your word seriously. Lord, we take your word seriously. We take you seriously. We certainly do not take ourselves seriously. But we love you because we know that you loved us first. So Lord, help me carry this message. Help me deliver this message the best I can, Lord. And the difficult message, but we need to know where we are and what we can do. Thank you in advance, Lord, in Yeshua's name. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, so are we on the screen? We're all good? All right. So I like to start with a couple of definitions. If you know me, if you heard me before, you probably heard that definitions before. Here it goes. Is it pulling me? Yes. Okay, good. Anti-Semitism is the irrational, and those are two words that I'm starting to really emphasize as I speak now, moving forward. Irrational and demonic hatred of the Jewish people and of Israel, characterized by thoughts, words, and or deeds against them. Okay? Can be a combination of all three or some, but that's what it is. Anti-Semitism is the irrational and demonic hatred of the Jewish people and of Israel, characterized by thoughts, words, and or deeds against them. A definition for normalization. Normalization is the process by which something previously considered abnormal or unacceptable becomes perceived as normal. And it's not necessarily bad, okay? The normalization of diplomatic ties between two enemy countries, it's all good. But you should never have the word normalization and anti-Semitism in the same sentence. That's an oxymoron. It should be an oxymoron. But you're going to discover today that it is not. And that's very scary. So I see... on the spectrum of the history of the Jewish people, I was going to say the history of mankind, but really, you can't have anti-Semitism without the Jews. So the spectrum of the history of the Jewish people, which goes back to the biblical account, I see six different markers of for anti-Semitism. And there's a divider in the middle, which is an event that marks, really, we speak of Jewish history as pre-Holocaust and post-Holocaust. It's that important of an event. So the first three events are started in the biblical days, theological anti-Judaism. It was a difference between the Christians and the Jews. It was not really a lot of animosity, just we don't think the same, we don't believe in the same. So it was just theological, mostly, anti-Judaism, not even anti-Semitism. Then, from a couple of centuries after the closing of the canon, moving all the way to the 1930s and 40s, we have what is known as classical anti-Semitism, which I describe in detail in my book, End Times Anti-Semitism. I give a whole history of anti-Semitism. Then, right at the Holocaust time, we have this racial anti-Semitism. The Jews are a race that needs to be destroyed, that needs to be annihilated, that needs, it's a vermin, a subhuman race. So that's the racial anti-Semitism of the Holocaust. Then after that, we have new anti-Semitism, and that's pretty much where everybody that I can see is parking today. They're parking on this, we are in the new anti-Semitism. They don't see anything beyond that, and that really, I think we need to refine that, define it a little more, because I see, and again, this is all developed in my book, End Times Antisemitism, in more details. This is, the normalization is what's in this book. End Times Antisemitism, I make a case that it started in 2012 with an event that took place in France. That was a killing of a rabbi and three children in a day school in Toulouse, in the south of France. And then there's one more. So we are now in End Times Antisemitism, which is a part of the new antisemitism. And basically, the victims have been made the perpetrators, and the perpetrators have been made the victims. There's been a role reversal. That's where we are right now. There's one more. It's tribulation antisemitism. And that one is even, it's the worst of them all. We are not going to be part of it. As I shared this morning, we can do everything we can to make sure as many Jewish people do not take part in this, because we can get them saved before the rapture, they'll come with us. But that's the next one. Right now we are in end times antisemitism, and I believe that we have reached a point where we are in the normalization of antisemitism. So I actually just did all this. I told you all this, all those slides. So I can skip all those. Look at this. So the normalization of antisemitism, can another Holocaust happen? Simon Wiesenthal, the Nazi hunter, wrote in Everyday Remembrance Day, a chronicle of Jewish martyrdom. He wrote, he gave us five criteria that need to be in place for another Holocaust to be possible. Number one is hatred. I will let you decide if it's in the world, okay? Hatred, bigotry, prejudice. Check. Dictatorship, one or a few or many. Check. Bureaucracy, rigid hierarchy of bureau chief, petty officials leading to the attitude of I was just following orders. Check. Technology, I wonder. Check. A crisis, like a war, an opportune moment to act on the hatred. Check. And I lied to you, it's six, not five. A minority or scapegoat to be demonized, leading to its ethnic cleansing. Check. So can another Holocaust happen? Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything's in place for that. Now, I picked up this, I'm going to try to play this clip for you, just to give you an idea of how where we are. This is on the streets of Florida 2 or 3 days ago. It's that recent. There's a man walking, and there's a man with a bullhorn, and the man with the bullhorn is part of an organization known as Goyim Defense League. The Goyim means the nations, okay? But this is a very anti-Semitic group. Some of you have already talked to me today. You've received flyers in your driveways with the Jews are controlling everything, the Jews are this, the Jews are that. And those are printed, most of them, by the Goyim Defense League. Or those banners that come from the bridge on the freeway saying that, you know, the Jews are responsible for the ills of the world. Or recently, things like Kanye was right. Things like that. This is the people, they're behind it. And this man, I don't know how good the sound will be, but I also put the two main statement that he makes as he speaks to a couple of people. I put him in print on the next slide. So, but let me show you this, and hopefully you will catch what he says. And let me make sure it works.
You think you should be put in an oven?
Are you Jewish? Oh my God. Leave our country, go back to Israel. You know where you bomb Palestinian kids? Where we fund you stupid Jews? $8 billion a year? You look like a horse. You look like a Jewish horse. Look at the horse face on this Jew. Horse face Jew! Horse face.
I actually edited this because it had some language in it that I don't think I could play in this church, and it was a little longer, but so the two things that he said is, on the first man that was crossing the street, do you think you should be put in ovens? Reference to the Holocaust. Or, leave our country, go back to Israel where you bomb Palestinian kids. Those are two of the statements. This is 3 days ago. I should have started with that. Today, February 25th, has been declared by these people, actually, they're like, you know, a neo-Nazis nutcase, by these people and a few other groups have followed them. Today, as we speak, right now, has been declared as National Hate Day. I got an email on this 3 days ago, and I thought, like, really? I mean, who's behind this? I mean, obviously, it's not on the American calendar or anything like that, but they declared this is going to be a National Hate Day, and police chiefs and I think even the FBI called Jewish community centers and synagogues all over the U.S. in the last couple of days saying, on Shabbat, on Saturday, right now as we speak, just make sure you have security. Now, we don't even need this, because on a good day, it's a bad day for the Jewish people now. But now they're being really, they keep pushing. So, I want to look at 10 points. And just because I was short on my first message, don't get your hopes set. This could be longer. The 10 points I'm going to try to go over. And again, you're getting the PowerPoints. Okay, if you put your name on the list, you're already getting both PowerPoints. And if you have not, make sure you put your name on the list to get this one. It's worth your name. Anyway, so the 10 points which I cover in detail in the book. Apathy, lack of education, low or incorrect reporting, desensitization, lack of accountability, empowerment, demonization of the defenders, persecution of Jews and defenders, encouragement to kill, and mass murder of Jews. So this is what we find. This is how we get to the normalization of anti-Semitism. How many of these are actually in place? You will be shocked. You will be shocked how many are in place. So let's start down the list. Apathy. Number one, people don't seem to care about anti-Semitism unless they are directly affected through someone they know. That is the state of people in general. Now, I understand that I'm preaching to the choir. I don't know who's watching online. Okay? Hopefully, part of the choir as well. But you never know. I'm preaching to the choir. But you need this because you need to understand what you're against. So I am not pointing this at you, not even close. But you need this because this is going to be those are going to be your tools and your weapons to fight the enemy. You need to understand where we are. So when I say people, I don't mean you, but I mean people in general. Unless it's in their backyard, they don't really care. They got bigger fish to fry. Anti-Semitism is not on most Christians' radar. When people don't care, they don't respond. They don't react. And we've seen this, of course, 80 years ago. Some of you might know who this is, Pastor Martin Niemöller, German pastor during the Second World War. If people continue being, that's not what he said, I have a quote from him right after that, but if people continue being apathetic toward anti-Semitism, they will miss the greater danger looming over other communities. And this is a famous quote that is attributed to him. First, they came for the socialists and did not speak out. And I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. We don't want to be there again. Please. So, Please don't boo when you see pictures of the people I'm going to show you. Okay, just let's be respectful. Let's understand that these people need Jesus, but they're wrong. Okay? Good. It doesn't take us anywhere to make fun of them or boo them. And I know we were tempted. I have my internal boo, but it's internal. So this is what you need to know. Anti-Semitism did not happen in a vacuum. I document all that in End Times Anti-Semitism. I should stop talking about that book because I've got two left. So you can get them on Amazon. Most people are unaware of the key players: victims, perpetrators, co-perpetrators, bystanders, and rescuers. In the case of this woman, Whoopi Goldberg, she's still, after being confronted publicly at least twice, privately I don't know how many times, she's still convinced that the Holocaust was not about race, and rather it was a white-on-white crime. It was not about race. It was everything about race. Now, it's not really about race when you think about who the Jewish people are, but the Holocaust, the reason why Hitler wanted to get rid of the Jews is because it was a race that was, according to the now debunked, although making a comeback, law of science of eugenics, the Jews were a subhuman race. Subhuman, not really human. And if you're not human, you need to be destroyed. And we were described as vermin. So it was all about race. And eugenics, this science, was debunked in the early 1900s, but it's making a comeback now, because it's convenient that we could use it again. But it's based on nothing. According to so number two, so that was number one. Okay, so number one was apathy. Number two is lack of education. She is clueless. If I had a chance, I'd talk to her. If I was invited, I'd talk to anybody. She is clueless, and she needs Jesus. Lack of education. According to a Pew Research survey, 84% of Americans still do not know what the term BDS means. Boycott, divestment, sanctions. Many Christians are in denial regarding Martin Luther's anti-Semitic diatribes at the end of his life. I'll get back to that at the end of the presentation to make one more point. But those are just some of the sad facts. And by the way, in this PowerPoint, I put all the links to the surveys and all my sources. So, because don't believe me, just check it for yourself. Most Christians have never heard of the 1920 San Remo Conference, which was more legally defining for modern Israel than the 1947 UN vote for the partition of British Mandate Palestine. So most Christians are completely ignorant about the history of the Jewish people and all the anti-Semitism against them. They just don't know. And how can we fight an enemy we don't know? So what do we do with lack of education? Well, I haven't found anything better. I like the 3 Ds of Natan Charansky, a Russian refusenik who's been working. I don't know if he's still doing that now, but he was working with the Ministry of Immigration, the Jewish agency, bringing in the Jewish olim, the immigrants, to the land. And he came up with the 3 Ds to define anti-Semitism, to be able to understand if it fits any of those or all of them, it's anti-Semitic. Demonization, double standards, delegitimization. I haven't found anything better to define what's anti-Semitic. This is brilliant. So this is his own words. The first D is the test of demonization. When the Jewish state is being demonized, when Israel's actions are blown out of all sensible proportion, when comparisons are made between Israelis and Nazis and between Palestinian refugee camps and Auschwitz, this is anti-Semitism, not legitimate criticism of Israel. That's the first D. The second D is the test of double standards. When criticism of Israel is applied selectively, when Israel is singled out by United Nations for human rights abuses, while the behavior of known and major abusers such as China, Iran, Cuba, and Syria, to name just a few, is ignored, when Israel's Magen David Adom, this is the equivalent of the Red Cross, when Israel's Magen David Adom alone among the world's ambulance services is denied admission to the International Red Cross, This is anti-Semitism. When you think about how much the Jews are doing to help the world, every time there is a catastrophe in the world, the Jews are the first one from Israel to send help, to send doctors, to send nurses, to send people. Every single time, they're there. Where are the Palestinians? They're not sending anybody. Don't get me started. The third D is the test of delegitimization. When Israel's fundamental right to exist is denied alone among all peoples in the world, this too is anti-Semitism. And this, I haven't found anything better to define anti-Semitism than the three Ds. So it's in there for you to remember. Number three is reporting. Low or incorrect reporting. Some of you remember in January of 2022 in Colleyville, Texas, which is about an hour and a half west of where I live. I was there when it happened. I reported and I did a short little video for our ministry. A hostage situation at a synagogue by a Muslim man was initially declared not anti-Semitic by the local FBI director. It is not an anti-Semitic act. It's on Shabbat in a synagogue against Jews by a Muslim who wants to have another Muslim taken out of prison locally here in Fort Worth, who's a terrorist, a woman, but it's not anti-Semitic. The FBI changed its story after pressure from the Jewish community, I think 2 or 3 days later. So they changed their story. It gets worse. May 2022 in Lyon, France. 90-year-old Jewish man René Ajaj was pushed out of from his 17th story window by a neighbor. The authorities initially saw no reason to suspect anti-Semitism. They came back and they said, maybe it was anti-Semitic. But it's, why is it so hard? Why is it so hard? It's either not reported or wrongly reported. Now, I'll bring it to recently. This is like 2 days ago. February 2023, the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel used a photo they labeled 1948 Tantura Massacre. The Tantura Massacre was something that took place in Israel at the time of the War of Independence when some Arabs died. It was a war, okay? People die in wars. And they blew it out of proportion, saying that a lot of people died, were massacred by the Jews, when in fact it was very few people. But the point is not that some people died, is the fact that they used this photo, which is a photo that has been verified to be from the Nordhausen concentration camp in Germany. It has nothing to do with the killing of the Arabs in Israel in 1948. So, Do you catch the double irony? It's like it's using the wrong photo to prove their point, but they're actually taking a picture of Jewish corpses to say those are Palestinians who died at the hand of the Jews. And I did not look how far it went, but I wouldn't be surprised if the mainstream media picked up on this and think, this is terrible. Until somebody said, wait a minute, we have this from the archives, this is the wrong photo. And actually, I have to say that the Palestinian Campaign for Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel pretty quickly said this was the wrong photo. So they came back and they said, we apologize. I saw it. I saw the apology. So good for them. But do you know how many more photos like this are published on the internet and are just going like it's the truth? I can't even count them. I'm just showing you one example. Okay. So low or incorrect reporting toward a solution. I'm going to try to give you something to go toward a solution, because if I just come here year after year to bring you the problem with no solution, then you're not going to go like, not that Melnick guy again. So when you are victim of anti-Semitism or witness anti-Semitism, report it. But to who you report it? Well, you try to report it to the authorities, the media, and Jewish advocacy groups, and probably your best bet are going to be the Jewish advocacy groups, because they have a voice. They are organized. If you call the police, if you call the press, you know, who knows nowadays. But I have, on the very end of this presentation, I put them all with their website. Some of the best ones, Stand With Us, they do really good work on campuses. The Canary Mission, so very good. Moment Magazine, they're on the left, but they have a great anti-Semitism monitor on the web. And the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, CAMRA, they are all very good. You send them the information. I would add to this the ADL, but the ADL can be a little pushy, a little overreacting, so you have to be careful with the ADL. And the ADL has also become a little woke over the last few years, unfortunately. But remember, if you see low or incorrect reporting and you don't say anything, silence is complicity. You become a co-perpetrator if you don't say anything. So it's time we speak up. Desensitization is a diminished emotional response to a negative or positive stimulus. Desensitization can come both from friends and foes. It is expected from foes, but what about when it comes from friends? When we hear comments that are clearly insensitive about Jewish people, including jokes about the Jews, I just heard a joke. I was teaching a Bible study at my church last Thursday, a couple of days ago, and at the end of the Bible study, this man who's not Jewish comes to me and goes, "Can I tell you a Jewish joke?" And I'm going like, "Ooh, ooh." I'm like, you know, I said, "Sure, as long as it's clean and, you know, it's not, you know, painting the Jews in a bad way. And then he said, "Well, it was given to me by Chuck Missler." Some of you might remember Chuck Missler. So I said, "Well, he was a friend of Israel." So, you know, so he told me the joke. And actually, it's very short, but it was funny. So it's two Jewish men. And I'll give you a clean Jewish joke. So when you said somebody can give you a Jewish joke, you can use that one. Two Jewish men are in an elevator. And every day they go to the same work. So they go in the elevator in the morning. They go up together. Don't say a word to each other. And then at the end of the day, they work for the same company. They go back in the elevator and they come down. And they don't say a word to each other. Two Jewish men. And they do this for 10 years. And after 10 years, one of the Jewish men says, "It has come to my attention that you and I have taken the same elevators for 10 years. And we haven't said a word to each other. Not even a hello." And the other guy goes, "You know, you're right. How are you doing?" "I don't ask." That's a safe Jewish joke. So there you go. So see, that it's not derogatory, it's just a joke. But there are other jokes that I've heard even. I had people in my own family, not my side of the family, but my wife's side of the family, that would say, and I used to kind of roll my eyes and just pretend I didn't hear it, but, you know, make joke about Jews being greedy, or I would tell that person that I got a good deal on something, and he would look at me and say, "Rub your nose," like Jews have big nose. Anyway, so when we hear, you know, people are desensitized. They are desensitized. I have that story in the book. I had a pastor at a church in Washington State years ago when I was a new believer, and I was just finished telling another pastor friend of mine in the pews about the fact that Christians, and that's like 25 years ago, okay, maybe 30, that Christians are desensitized when it comes to Jewish people. And he goes, "Oh, Olivia, you're overreacting." And our senior pastor was preaching that Wednesday night, and he's pacing the stage, and he's going, "Now, I want to paint the picture. The Jews were just finished killing Christ." And I go like, bing, like this. I elbow my pastor friend, and I go, "See?" And he looks at me, and he goes, "What?" None of them, that pastor or the senior pastor, are anti-Semitic. One is with the Lord now. I knew them both. I knew their hearts. There's no question in my mind they didn't mean anything bad. They're completely desensitized. They were not even hearing what they were saying. And that's from the friends. Imagine what can happen from the foes. It's all there. Number five, no accountability. This drives me crazy. 2017 in Paris, the French seem to have a lot of it for some reason, of the anti-Semitism. Maybe it's because France has the largest Muslim community in Europe. Like 11% of France is Muslim. It's really, really interesting the way things are changing in France. May 2017 in Paris, A retired Jewish doctor, Sarah Halimi, was thrown out of a second floor, or at least it's not the 17th floor. Well, thrown out of the second floor window by her neighbor, Kolibi Traore, screaming, Allahu Akbar. This is Kolibi Traore. In 2021, in Paris, Halimi killer, Kolibi Traore, was not even put on trial. No accountability. Not put on trial after the French Cour de Cassation, which is the equivalent of the American the highest court, the Supreme Court. That's the French Supreme Court. After the French Cour de Cassation deemed him not responsible since he was high on cannabis when he acted. So if you... Now, what the message it's sending people, and believe me, that message was loud and clear. If you want to kill a Jew, just make sure you smoke a joint. What else do you hear from that? And here's the irony. In France, if you throw a cat or a dog, your pet, through the window, you get up to $70,000 euro fine and up to 5 years in prison. But if you throw a Jew through the window, smoke a joint, you'll walk free. It took place in 2017. It took them 4 years to realize we're not going to trial him. It's not worth it. So in 2021, he walked free. No accountability. Still under no accountability, Campus Intifada or Campus Jihad. Over 200 American colleges facilitate conferences and seminars led by anti-Semites and pro-Palestinian speakers while boycotting and blocking any event about Israel or Zionism. Okay, this is becoming a big problem. And the problem is that our kids don't know how to defend themselves. The Christians don't really know how to defend their Jewish friends. The Jewish people are forced to not have a voice. And the pro-Palestinian narrative is just running rampant. There's no balance. So it's very scary. And of course, even our Christian kids and grandkids, we live in an era where most people don't read their Bible anymore, so they don't have a Bible education. You know the danger of sending your kids to college. I'm not going to tell you. It's very dangerous. So, U.S. bipartisan task force requested by Congress in 2022 identified the problem. It formed committees to discuss the strategy, gather statistics, implement very little, and almost zero enforcing. It was just on paper. It's all on paper. And that's very, very sad. It's all those things are like, you know, a task force for this and a task force for that. In the meantime, Jews are being beat up on the streets in Brooklyn, everywhere. It's okay, let me keep moving because you're not listening fast enough. So toward a solution, it's a little bit of the same like prior. When you are made aware of the lack of accountability, you should also report it to authorities, media, Jewish advocacy groups, such as the ones that I've already mentioned. And please don't think that you reporting to those Jewish groups, which I think is probably your best bet, don't think it's going to go unnoticed. They do have a voice. Number six, empowerment. The result of the lack of accountability is the empowerment of the perpetrators and an increase in anti-Semitic crimes. According to the ADL, anti-Semitic incidents reached an all-time high in 2021, 34% increase over 2020. Attacks against synagogues increased by 61%. 2022 will most likely break the 2021 record. We don't have the numbers yet. They're still tallying them. When you are made aware of the empowerment of anti-Semites, do not let them intimidate you. Know the law so you can warn people and report the culprits. The bottom line, friends, is we have to start speaking up. Because once we're taken, we can't speak up anymore. And it is our duty to speak up against this kind of anti-Semitism and to really show our Jewish community that we care. Because if you say, I'm Christian, I love the Jewish people, I love Israel, and when those things happen, nothing happens, you don't speak up, they're going to go like, yeah, it's all talk. Demonization of the defenders. The current polarization of America makes it very difficult to dialogue or speak up to defend people on any subject. Civility seems to be a thing of the past. Have you noticed? We can no longer, I don't know about you, but it's really hard to agree to disagree. You talk about anything with somebody who has a different view, they start putting labels on you. Those who choose to defend the victims of anti-Semitism are exposing themselves. I want to warn you. The right thing to do is to speak up against anti-Semitism, but I want to warn you, you're not going to make friends with the Jewish people, you will. But it's not popular. We must take a side and defend it. Something very sobering I saw the other day online, and I just stole it because that's what I do. Those who hid Anne Frank were breaking the law. Those who killed her were following it. Just let that sink in. Because this is where it's coming. It's coming to having to make choices like that. So the demonization of the defenders, you are not going to be liked. If you help the Jewish people, you're not going to be liked, but it's the right thing to do. Of course, we don't just love Israel, love the Jewish people and help them because the Bible says that the Jewish people are the chosen people, they're special. We do it because we want to make sure that we are given a chance to make a connection, and any opportunity we have, we want them to know we do it because of what Jesus did for us and what he can do for them. Helping, let me make something very clear. This is also something I'm not going to say steal because that's, you know, I'm going to say I borrowed from my friend from One for Israel, I think it's Etan Bar. He said this. He said, when you help or when you have humanitarian help for the Jewish people of any kind, just humanitarian help, it is akin to sending a Jew to hell on a full stomach. And I'm not going to do that. And I know you're not going to want to do that. Number 8, increased persecution of Jews. 3 more, and we have time to finish. What's wrong with me? I'm on time twice now. Increased persecution of Jews. Starting in the mid-1930s, the persecution of Jews was mandated, encouraged, and even rewarded. Persecution can be physical or verbal. Paris, December 2022, Paris again, a TV guest is publicly criticized for wearing his kippah, his yarmulke, skull cap, on the set in a news report, and he asked to keep his religion to himself. I have the whole clip, but it's in French, but it made me laugh because the guy is sitting next to this lady, and the lady looks at him, and she goes, "Why do you have to wear a yarmulke on the news? Why do you have to wear a yarmulke?" And he goes, Did you wear it on the show because we're talking about a Jewish topic? And he goes, "No, I wear it every day. I don't put it on or off. I wear it everywhere." And she goes, "Can you just keep your religion to yourself? We're in France, which is, you know, a secular country. They're separate. You know, you cannot wear anything in school or whatever." So she says, "Can you just keep it to yourself? We're in France." And he goes, "What do you mean keep it to myself? I'm from Israel. My name is Cohen." So, you know, he had a good comeback, and he didn't take it off, by the way. He didn't take it off. But this is, it's tragic. On national TV, during a live show, this woman looks at me and she goes, "Take off your yarmulke. We don't need to see that you're Jewish." Wow. That was in last December. Some of you might have heard that. UC Berkeley Law Schools in 2022, the end of 2022, decided to develop a Jewish-free zone on campus. The move was eerily reminiscent of the Judenfrei Nazi Germany, the, you know, Jew-free Nazi Germany. Some of the language, and I wrote an article on my blog, I invite you to go see it, newantisemitism.com. Some of the language used by the law schools was very concerning, and I quote them. "In the interest of protecting the safety and welfare of Palestinian students on campus," and they insert the, and there was like 9 different organizations, so they put the name there. So, "In the interest of protecting the safety and welfare of the Palestinian students on campus, this organization will not invite speakers that have expressed and continue to hold views or host, sponsor, promote events in support of Zionism, the apartheid state of Israel, and the occupation of Palestine." So I recommend, and that one I stole from Andy, I recommend that we take the Daniel approach. I've been teaching Daniel at my Bible study, and I'm never going to finish it because I'm basing it on this study, and he's got 60 one-hour videos. And that's probably the short version. So, but in the book of Daniel, in Daniel 3, I just really love, this has to be If you trust the Lord, if you are in Messiah, if you know He's got you, does He have your back?
Yes.
I didn't hear you.
Yes.
Okay, so listen to this. Daniel 3:16 through 18. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, you know we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter." And, you know, they were asked to bow to the statue and worship the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. "If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and He will deliver us out of your hand, O king." Here comes a clincher. "But even if He doesn't, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." My God is the same if He comes through or if He doesn't come through. It doesn't mean He doesn't love me. His timing is perfect. Amen. Whatever He decides is perfect. And I know He loves me. Why? Because He sent His Son to die for me. Yeah. That's the ultimate sign of love. Death and resurrection, remember? Those two words are together. So the Daniel approach is, and I really like what you did, Andy, on civil disobedience. I mean, those 4 points. Because we probably will, sooner than we think, come to that. So I got this straight from Andy's study. I invite you to do that study on Daniel. Again, it's like 60 hours. It's a short version, but it's really good. Well, you know, with Andy, 60 hours is a short version. You know that. Yeah. It's usually one sermon on a Sunday. So, 4 points. There must be, you know, to commit civil disobedience, there must be a crystal clear conflict between the laws of man and the laws of God. There must be an exhaustion of all creative legal remedies. Civil disobedience must always be the last resort for believers. And here's one that you cannot ignore. There must be a willingness for consequences. And you have to maintain respect for civil authorities. You see this all throughout the book of Daniel. You know, we don't agree with you, O king. You know, it's just very interesting how they come to him and they always, you know, say, we recognize your position, but you're not the boss of us. That's what they're saying. So this is probably coming to a theater near you very soon. And we'll have to make some moves to help our Jewish friends. Let me finish with this. I got two more points and I'm going to wrap it up. Kanye West diatribe, encouragement to kill Jews. That's number 9. We're there. I'm just going to give you I'll give it to you ahead of time. All 9 points already established. The last one, the mass killing of Jews, is the only one that hasn't happened yet. But it's around the corner. Kanye West diatribe. I'm a bit sleepy tonight, but when I wake up, I'm going Death Con. You didn't hear what he was talking about. Death Con 3 on Jewish people. The words of a celebrity with over 30 million followers. And the support and defense from another celebrity. That really bothered me even more. What he said was very troublesome, and a lot of people dropped him, and that was actually a pretty good reaction. But what Candace Owens said about him really bothered me a lot more than what he said, because I used to respect her. If you're an honest person, you did not think this tweet was anti-Semitic. You didn't think that he wrote this tweet because he hates or wants to genocide the Jewish people. This does not represent the beginning of a Holocaust. She needs to be educated. And here is one of my final points here. Martin Luther did not look forward to what Hitler was going to do because he did not know Hitler. But Hitler looked back at Luther and said, "I'm finishing the job." That's part of history. And I'm telling you, Kanye doesn't know who he's possibly not looking forward to, but whoever that question mark is, they will look back one day and say, "Kanye said it, he started it, let me finish it." So she needs to be educated on that. Those are the wrong words to say. How much time do I have left? Okay. Number 10. Mass murder of Jews. Well, it happens to be that, I've already mentioned that verse today, Zechariah 13, 8 and 9, the one-third and two-thirds, so I'm not going to go over that again. It's in the notes. Let me wrap this up. Once something previously considered abnormal or unacceptable has become normal, then the normal becomes abnormal. And we are the normal. You know who I want to be? You know who you want to be? You want to be this guy. The lone men refusing to do the Nazi salute in 1936. They're all doing the Nazi salute and he is just looking, determined not to raise his hand. We want to be him. It's not going to be popular, but we want to be him. Isaiah 5:20, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. So friends, we are here. Yeah, thank you, Olivia. We knew that. The question mark represents the imminence. We don't know when, but the next event is the rapture. We don't know how much time we have left, but we have very little time left to make a difference and to reach out to a Jewish friend. What is left for us to do when we have become abnormal to society? When it comes to Jewish people, all that might be left for us as believers is to protect them and provide for them in the name of Messiah, because of the Messiah, and with the gospel. It has to be with the gospel. But it's coming, and I believe that we have checked 9 of the 10 boxes. Apathy, checked. Lack of education, check. Low, incorrect, check. Desensitization, lack of accountability, empowerment, demonization of the defenders, persecution of Jews and defenders, encouragement to kill the Jews, all checked. What's left is a mass murder of the Jews. If I can help it, if we can help it, not on our watch. God bless you. Oh.